championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. We are a little over 2 weeks away from the beginning of the season as the Longhorns take on the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. So we're going to start off by telling y'all what should be the expectations for this team headed into the season, and what should the fans expect out of this team. What's going to be the most surprising part of this team? Then we're going to go over all of the injuries that have happened through fall camp, as we have had five big ones happen over the past week, and then get into some recruiting as Texas got the commitment of Jaren Thompson and Princely Mamielin, as well as trended very well for Quentin Johnston and Xavier Alford. Joe, my man, how's it been? How's the past week been?
It's been good. I think you and I have been to some similar spots, but just glad that practice is back and that we're talking to players again instead of just trying to figure out, talking to players and coaches and in at press conferences instead of, you know, just trying to figure things out and get breadcrumbs. We're getting whole loaves of information from not only the coaches but from players too in these past couple of weeks, and it's been a lot more enjoyable to be in the busy season than in the dead period.
Yeah, it seems like they're giving us a guy every single day, but let's just go ahead and jump right into what's going to come up, because fall camp is quickly coming to an end, and the season is just rushing towards us. Going into the season, there are a lot of different expectations from a lot of different places, from a lot of different people. But Joe, you and I, we need to break down all of these expectations and give the people who are listening to the show what they should expect. What is a valid expectation for this team?
I think the expectation for this team should be that they should be in Arlington in the first week of December. There's no specific record that guarantees you getting there. They got there at 9-3 last year. I think the preference, I guess, is to get there at maybe 10-2 with only one conference loss. But, you know, you can still get there if you have two conference losses. You can even get there at 8-4. That would mean that there was some surprising and disappointing developments in the non-conference schedule. So I don't know if there's a record that you have to pinpoint. The expectation that you have to meet is to be in Arlington at the end of the season. Obviously, you have season goals of beating, you know, ranked teams on your schedule, defending your home turf, defeating Oklahoma. And that'll go a long way to make sure that you get your end record to where it needs to be in Arlington. So, you know, I think that the floor for getting to Arlington, I think we've seen that over the course of the Big 12 title game history, its second version, is that you've got to have either only one or two conference losses in order to be able to get there. So I think that's what Texas needs to strive for. No more than two conference losses, no more than three losses total heading into the Big 12 championship game. And, you know, if that one loss is LSU, it's a lot better than it being Louisiana Tech or even Rice. But the expectation, you know, it's not so much the details that matter as much as you have to be in Arlington for the Big 12 title game at the end of the season. And it's most likely happening at either 9-3 or 10-2 or even 11-1. But I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah, I feel like 11-1 is really shooting for the moon there. But I agree. I think you need to be in Arlington by the end of the season, one way or another. Here's the thing, is I think Texas now, under Tom Herman at this point, should limit embarrassments. I think Texas should not have any embarrassments in their schedule. The teams they should beat, they should beat. But I think heading into this season, I am not yet sure if that is a valid expectation. I think, like you said, this team will go 9-3 and or 10-2, and unless those two losses are to LSU and Oklahoma, then that means that they've had one loss where they probably should not have lost, unless it's Iowa State. Still, that means that I'm guessing there's going to be at least one game that just gets away from Texas this season. That's my expectation.
Right, and that happened multiple times last year. I mean, even the first Oklahoma game kind of got away from them towards the end. Texas Tech started to get away from them until little Jordan Humphrey came through. Oklahoma State got away from them early, and they couldn't get back into it late. I don't think Baylor was a game that got away from them, but, you know, with a backup quarterback and, you know, the effects that that had on the offense, that made a little bit more sense for it to happen. And plus, the defense played well enough to only limit to, what, 17 points. So, you know, like you said, there can't be any more Oklahoma State slip-ups, throwing an interception, getting a defensive holding call, you know, not starting your starting corners or not having your starting corners available because of violating team rules. You're right. That can't be happening this year. You can be in close games. Everybody's in close games, except, you know, if you're at an upper echelon of elite talent that Texas is not quite at yet. But, you know, there shouldn't be any like, oh no, Texas just, you know, went out to a 21-point deficit and it's about to be the second quarter against Kansas State. That simply cannot happen this year. I think the talent level is high enough to prevent that from being an issue. And I think as we've seen that the coaching acumen should prevent that from being a problem. I think even if something bad does happen, you've seen that the staff has a pretty good, you know, recovery gene. It's not great, but when was the last time this staff was blown out? I think it was what, TCU in their first year? Was that really like the worst game? Or even, I guess, Maryland, until it got tight late with Bushel coming back down the stretch. But they don't have a ton of, you know, games that get out of hand from them. And with an increased talent level, even if a game was able to get out of hand for a little bit, they should be able to, you know, use that talent gap they have on the rest of the conference to help them overcome any of those issues that they might have or create for themselves this season.
Right. And let me go ahead and define what I mean by an embarrassment. Maryland, Oklahoma State, those were embarrassments. That's a team that you're not supposed to lose to, that you are losing to, and not in a very pretty way. So I don't expect it, and I don't think fans should expect those to go away 100%. But I do think fans should expect better fourth quarter play. The Longhorns last year had a negative 69-point differential in the fourth quarter. They were not good at finishing either that on in the fourth quarter or on third downs on defense, and they were pretty abysmal. This team should be better at finishing, especially on the offensive side. And I guess we can get into where the offense should be. Because this offense should, at least heading into the season, have an identity. That's something they didn't have at the beginning going into the season, but they got throughout the season. Now they have an identity. This offense should build on top of that and turn that identity into not just beating teams like Kansas by a few points, but really taking it to them. And I don't expect the offense to really go guns a-blazing, shootout like Oklahoma style. That's not how Tom Herman works. That's not how his offenses work. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I would expect these games to go 3 touchdowns, and then you hold on to that lead. That's what I would expect out of this offense. The identity is there. Now they need to execute with it.
I don't think you're going to see like a drastic shift in what play calling looks like for this offense. I think, you know, instead of the coaches having to play call 10, 11 play drives, you're going to see some 5-play drives. Or the hope by the staff is that you see some 5-play drives. I think, you know, where this offense should be, just kind of going position by position, they should expect to be better at quarterback. They should expect, if healthy, to be just as good at running back, I feel like. Trey Watson was a reliable guy, but there was not a whole lot of explosion in his game, and maybe that was robbed somewhat by his, you know, multiple knee problems. Now you got Jordan Whittington, who, you know, after watching him for several years, you know he's got explosion. I think the offense really should be confident in its offensive line. The line last year was good, with Calvin Anderson being consistent, with Sam Cosmi coming on last year, and you know, seniors like Elijah Rodriguez and Patrick Vahe doing a good job. But the guys who are replacing Patrick Vahe and Elijah Rodriguez look to be upgrades. No matter who it is, there seems to be like 3 or 4 guys in contention for those roles, but they look to be upgrades because those two guys, you know, were reliable, but at the same time, there would be some plays where their weak points would get attacked, and those weak points would really come back to hurt the offense. And a lot of that was, you know, pass protection between the two of them. But I think this year, you know, with Cosmi going to left tackle, a center who's been established, and guys who have a lot of experience but maybe not technically starts, I think the offense should expect to be better along the offensive line. And if you're just as good, if about the same, you know, in the same neighborhood at running back, you're going to see an uptick in the entire offense, because the offensive line has, you know, has a chance to be just as good, if not better, than last year's line, with some younger players on it, save for the senior in the middle.
Yeah, and you missed wide receivers, and personally, I've been thinking about this, and I can't...
Go ahead.
I can't pull myself one way or the other if they'll be better or maybe worse than last year's wide receivers, so I think it's a little bit of a push.
Right, and the thing, I think what you'll see this year is, you know, a bunch of people have talked about how wide receiver looks to be extremely talented. I mean, you have two... for sure guys that you could throw out at X and be confident that they could make plays, and Colin Johnson and Malcolm Epps, especially after this spring. You feel good about Marcus Washington, but he just got here. You have a senior at slot now who you know how reliable he is. You saw how reliable he was last year at Z, and you feel like that's going to translate well into the slot. You've got an electric talent who still has to understand things, and Jake Smith. Boom, that's another two deep. Then you go outside, and you have Brennan Eagles, who has shot up the depth chart. Now you have Josh Moore. Boom. Those are two guys that have played football at Texas. So you have
John Burt.
Yeah, and then you add John Burt as a guy who can kind of swing between the two outside spots. You know, Duvernay can go back outside. Josh Moore can go back inside. You have legit two-deep depth at wide receiver this year, whereas you didn't have that so much last year. It was your top three of Johnson, Humphrey, and Duvernay, and then, if I remember right, basically a little bit of Gerard Hurd interspersed here and there. So I think, you know, not only should the receivers be an improved group, I know wide receiver rotation was a huge problem in Tom Herman's first year, but I think it's going to be something you see a little bit more of this year, and there's going to be a reason behind it. It's not like they're rotating for rest. They're rotating, yes, a little bit for rest, but also because those guys behind them, they're fresh and they're nearly as good, or they feel just as confident in them as they do in the starters in the top three.
Right. So let's flip to the other side of the ball. What are you expecting out of this defense this year? What should fans expect out of this defense? Where should the defense be?
I think you can expect strength along the defensive line, and I'll go ahead and include Joseph Osai in that grouping. You know, your front four, you should feel very good about, you know, Joseph Osai, Taquan Graham, Keandre Coburn, and Malcolm Roach. That's a varying level of experience and talent. You know, you've got two young guys from Texas's great recruiting classes. You got a couple older guys from who have been developed in the system and, you know, are now pushing for playing time after three seniors went and, you know, graduated last year. I think you should
feel
very...
And like the wide receiver room, there's incredible two deep talent.
Right. I think you can feel pretty confident that you've got two deep across the board. I mean, you've got, you know, at the end spot, guys like Jamari Chisholm, Marquez Bimage. I mean, even Jacoby Jones could be thrown in there.
Gerald Wilbon.
Gerald Wilbon. DeAndre Christmas Giles, even Tavondre Sweat has been impressed.
Mora Ojimo, it's just the names.
Right. Yeah, there you've got, you know, for three spots, you've got at least maybe six, seven guys that you feel, you know, you brought along knowing that they can play and that they will likely get some snaps this year. Continuing that trend, right behind Joseph Osai, you got Byron Vaughns, who continues to develop and looks a lot different than when he stepped on campus just a couple of years ago. So I think you should expect the defense to be very reliable up front. Now, the thing is, you know, last year that may not have been able to help much because, you know, this is the Big 12. This is a passing league, or at least it seemed to be, you know, an air raid league. Now you brought in a lot of guys, you know, Chris Kleeman at K-State. It's not going to change up too much. There'll still be some spread principles, but there's going to be a lot of, you know, what people would call old school football. West Virginia.
They still might be an upgrade from what Kansas State had.
Right. West Virginia. You know, Neil Brown is well versed in the air raid system, but he may run the ball even more than Dana Holgorsen, who ran the ball a lot for an air raid guy. Texas Tech, their program and their offense is starting to look very similar to Tom Herman's. Similar offensive philosophy, add a tight end, extra gap, you know, physical running, but open it up with the passing game at times. And then Kansas, you know, who cares? So there's significantly less of an air raid presence in this conference. And you may see that as a result swing back to teams wanting to set up their offense through the run first. And with a good front four or, you know, three, or in a linebacker front three and a half, you may see Texas's defensive line have a little bit more of an impact on a game-to-game basis than you might have last year, when you have all these air raid teams who, you know, if they don't have the offensive line talent to match up with Texas, whatever, they'll just pass it out in 2 seconds. Or if they have the wide receiver talent to get open, they'll allow that to develop, maybe move the pocket a little bit and, you know, make sure that the defensive line doesn't have a chance to, you know, cause any problems in the passing game. Now, I guess that kind of starts the discussion about what's behind them, to where, you know, Tom Herman has called it Star Wars with all the defensive backs if they flood the field with defensive backs. So I think that, you know, it's one of those things where you can either choose it starts with the defensive backs or it starts with the defensive line, but they obviously are extremely interconnected. And I think maybe the trend of this conference is, you know, offensive philosophy, maybe away from total raid system to a little bit more pro spread, should allow for Texas's improved defensive line unit, or at least talented defensive line unit, to make a little bit more of an impact than it possibly has in years past.
And Joe, I know you and I have talked about this off air, but isn't it kind of funny how as the NFL starts to go away from the pro style and more into the spread, the Big 12 goes away from the spread and into the pro?
Right. It's not as video gamey, I guess, is the right way to put it. I mean, obviously, Cliff Kingsbury getting hired and, you know, trying to bring in a full-on air raid system to the NFL is going to be interesting to watch. And, of course, you know, all these teams, they want the Mahomes. They want that offense to where you can just pass it to these, you know, 5'10", 180 guys who will just burn by everybody. There's a lot of, you know, that level of talent is being produced. That's why you're seeing the NFL move to it, because the talent in college played that way and is very adept in that system, as they show. I mean, that's why Hollywood Brown, who is a small person as far as NFL receivers go, is going to be in the NFL. Like, there's some elements of a college offense there in Baltimore for him to be able to, you know, probably get open and succeed, you know, aside with his elite speed. So right. It's just interesting that that's where a lot of the conference went. I think, you know, for a lot of them, they were not getting the results they wanted. So, you know, West Virginia for sure, Texas Tech for sure, Kansas, who knows. You know, Kansas State's kind of its own different situation with Bill Snyder retiring, and they thought, well, you know, every hire is a little bit of reaction to the last one. So, well, last time we had this super wide open offense, you know, we're going to win by scoring more points than you. And it never worked out that way. So I think you're seeing a little bit of a reaction to that. And I think Texas' defensive line will be able to maybe benefit from that, just because you'll see some teams that want to run the ball a little bit more is part of their philosophy.
But the problem with Texas, and this is something that the defense is going to have trouble with, is that second level. Jeffrey McCulloch is good, but the other guys on that linebacker, in that linebacker core, it's going to be a little shaky. So the defense is going to have to figure out where they are, their identity, early on in the season. It's funny because the first year Orlando was here, we were screaming, run lightning package, run the dime package. That is what Texas is best at. And then last year it was the nickel package and they kept on running the dime. And we were like, stop running the dime, run the nickel package. Now we're going to refigure that out because we don't know where Texas really is with these linebackers. But it sounds like, you know, while we're saying Marcus Tillman's looking good, while Caleb Johnson's looking good, they're looking good for guys who are just gotten here, right?
Yeah, exactly. It is, you know, you knew one linebacker spot was pretty much taken care of with Jeffrey McCulloch. You knew the other one was taken care of with Joseph Osai. And then you just threw whatever you could find, quality, whatever you could find at the position. I mean, the returns sound positive so far for the linebackers. There hasn't been a lot. You know, Tom Herman seems, if he wants to, you know, wake a position group up, he'll go to the media and be like, we got to get better from them. They've got to, you know, they've got to improve. We need to see more from them. If he thinks they're doing okay, he'll just say they're doing okay. And if he thinks they're doing great, he'll go on about how they're doing well. He hasn't really done a ton of that across the board. It hasn't been any of the negative. It's been a lot of, yeah, they're doing well. They're swimming, but, you know, they're doing all right. With the exception of Marcus Tillman, who, yes, I had a feeling that would happen. That's one guy that he's very much, you know, talked about, who's succeeded after coming in and enrolling early. So the battle for that second linebacker spot is going to probably rage throughout the rest of fall camp. It looks like Ayodele Adeoye may not be taking the job, but is winning right now. We haven't really heard much of, you know, it not being his whenever the ones come on, although they've obviously tried Caleb Johnson and Juwan Mitchell there. But yeah, that's definitely, you know, one of the biggest questions for fall camp. I know I go on and on about corner, but for everybody else, and understandably so, linebacker is definitely the biggest concern. And we saw what happened last year. If you have a guy that defenses can hunt like they did with Anthony Wheeler, then they're going to hunt them. They're going to find them and, you know, make that be a weak point in your offense. And as long as, you know, Tom Herman feels pretty good about Jeffrey McCulloch, you have an idea that at least 2/3 of your linebacking core is going to be okay. Now, it's just that one that's open to the field with Mac. That's the one that you got to really concern about. And you have to find a guy who, you know, is very rare to find these days. This guy who can be competent in pass coverage, dropping in zone, and even playing on some flex tight ends, and then be able to recognize and come in and play the run when you need to. It's not easy in this conference, and that's why Texas basically grabbed 4 or 5 guys and said, all right, have at it. Figure out who can do it best.
The Jim Harbaugh method of just grabbing a bunch of guys and throwing them at the problem. But that's going to be a big problem. And Todd Orlando's job this year is really going to be figuring out how to cover up the blemish that is right now your middle linebacker spot. Figuring out how to hide it. And he's going to have a lot of trouble with that since you've lost 2 corners who were both seniors. Now, it might be a little bit of addition through subtraction, but it's still going to be a big, big question mark for Todd Orlando. And that's where, when we say, where should this defense be? It's going to be a little bit shaky. They don't yet have the identity going in. Where should they be at the end of the season? They should finally find that identity. Let's hope they find it before LSU. Usually takes them 3 games into the season to do it, but hopefully they do it in 2. So, Joe, going into the season, what do you expect to be the most surprising part of this team? We're going to go ahead and do a good and a bad, but Joe, start me off with a good expectation, something that's going to surprise us going into this year.
Ooh, let us see. What is going to be the most surprising part of this team? I think you can expect this to be, or push to be, an elite OL, an offensive line, maybe possibly even the best in the conference. I really think that, you know, replacing 3 starters is going to be the buzz that, you know, a lot of people look at. But you're one of the starters you're replacing, you're using Sam Cosmi to replace. The other 2 I went into about Patrick Vahe and Elijah Rodriguez. You're replacing him with either Denzel Okafor, who has played. He's been here for what? This will be his. He had a red shirt. He'll be a red shirt junior. Yeah. He'll be a redshirt junior. You got Derek Kerstetter, who's about to be a true sophomore, who has played. Junior Angulau, who's redshirted, part of your very talented 2018 class. Tope Amade, who's been in the program for a long time. Christian Jones, who's been, you know, able to improve his skill set a lot after redshirting. I think you can be pretty confident that, you know, at least along the top line, this could be the best offensive line in the conference. Now, a lot of that depends on health. You know, Tom Herman talked recently about number 7 and number 8 not being quite clear cut yet. And that's an issue because, you know, last year was a rarity where I think what they only had, they did not play a ton of O linemen last year. They kind of had their guys figured out and knew who it was. This year, they, you know, you can't expect that to always happen. You can't expect to go fully healthy, you know, that to where you're not dipping into number 7 and number 8 at certain times. But I know a lot of people expect Oklahoma's offense to fall off. It may not fall off, but it'll fall a little bit. And a lot of that will be in part because they're replacing four NFL draft picks on their offensive line. And so I think there's good reason to believe that Texas could have one of the best offensive lines, if not the best offensive line in the conference. I think maybe their competition would be Tech with a lot of experience, maybe Baylor with, you know, a couple grad transfers and some well-built guys that they've developed, but or TCU even with their tackle duo. But I think Texas could prove over the course of the season to maybe, you know, have the best offensive line in the conference. So I think that's not something Texas has had in a long time.
Especially with how slept on Samuel Cosmi is. That dude is severely slept on. It's almost unreal. I really haven't seen something like this in a while. I agree with you up to a point. I don't think that they're going to be the best overall group. I think they have the best top end. Their starting five might be the best. But after that, I don't know if you said this. I don't think they're going to be as good. If they lose one of those guys, I think the offensive line might take a hit. And it might be pretty big. So I agree. The outside, the starting guys look really good. You start breaking out that two deep, it might start looking less good. It's not like the defensive line.
Right.
My good surprising part of this team this year, I think, will be improving the tight end position. I'm a big proponent of Cade Brewer. Maybe it's just the fact that him hurdling the Oklahoma player in his freshman year just plays throughout my mind all day long. But I think he is going to give what is already a pretty potent wide receiver room a little bit more potency. He's going to make it a little bit more dangerous by really waking up the tight end passing game. I think he'll be serviceable as a blocker. He's not going to be Andrew Beck level blocking. So your run game might hurt a little bit. But he is going to be a huge upgrade in that passing game. We've already heard about stories from him and Sam working after practice on the seam route where Sam Ehlinger missed on Andrew Beck time and time again, and it just annoyed the hell out of Longhorn fans. This year, I don't think that's going to happen, and I don't think anybody's really expecting the tight end room to be an upgrade in the passing game as much as it will be. So, Joe, the next thing, let's get into some of the bad stuff. Because we got to, you know, there always has to be balance. I'm Thanos here. What is the bad part of this team? What's going to be the surprisingly bad part of the team?
Yeah, where does the Kool-Aid run dry, and then you start to really wonder where it's going? I mean, I know I've talked a ton about corner being my concern, just because of freshmen or young players and without a ton of experience, more than half a season of experience playing against some of the wide receivers in this league. But at the same time, I don't know if that's going to be surprisingly bad. I mean, I'm talking about it right now. I kind of expect for there to be some growing pains out there at corner. I think, honestly, the most surprising part of this team where it could go south, I'm going to have to go the opposite direction, at least from what you just said. I think it could be that tight end is, you know, it's somewhere in between Garrett Gray and Andrew Beck. That's still something that a lot of people are counting on because they saw what Andrew Beck did last year and thought, okay, well, you know, Cade Brewer's been in the program for a couple of years. He should know what to do. He should know where to go and you know, be able to be fully recovered, fully healthy, and be the player we saw in his Lake Travis film. The last time he was asked to do that, it was, you know, 20 pounds ago, his freshman year. And he was not, you know, wasn't able to last the whole season, I believe. So, a little bit different from what you were talking about. I think that may be where people see, like, oh, you know, it's not like Andrew Beck was phenomenal, but I think that's why you hear Tom Herman talk about how much they're missing him right now. Not only to, you know, levy praise on a guy who was a captain and bought into his program, but because there is a drop-off at that position, because, you know, Cade Brewer may not be as apt blocking as Andrew Beck was. So, you know, I think there's a lot of reason to expect some good from there. But, you know, it could be one of those things where, maybe Cade Brewer does not end up being as good as Andrew Beck and Reese Leto, and you know, still somehow hasn't figured it out in his first couple years. And Jared Wiley and Braden Liebrock aren't ready because they're still freshmen, despite Wiley enrolling early. So I think that could be where you find some problems for this team, and we know how important that is for the offense. You know, Tom Herman likes having a tight end on the field because of the not only the personnel matchups it creates, but the schematic problems it creates for the defense. And, you know, putting, you know, maybe you're one of your better cover safeties on the tight end just because where they are on the field when you're moving at tempo. So, you know, that's got to be something that is still a part of the offense, but it cannot become an Achilles heel. And I don't think it's going to get to that level, but I am not convinced that tight end play in 2019 will be the same as it was in 2018.
Now we have the pro and the con for the tight end position going into the year. We have both sides of the argument. I don't know how surprising this is going to be, but I'm expecting one loss that is just going to, that's going to be surprising to people. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be a bad loss, like what happened with Oklahoma State. That is going to be the most surprising part of this team that is bad. The consistency. It's not going to be there. There's going to be one part of this team that is just consistently a headache. Whether that is, again, they cannot get any pressure on third downs, or they can't finish in the fourth quarter, or something like that. And it's going to bite them in the butt this year, and it's just not going to be a fun weekend. That's what I'm expecting. You know, that's where I think things can fall apart for this team, is just consistency issues.
Yeah, it's something they've done in, you know, each of their, I mean, basically in each of Tom Herman's seasons as head coach. I'm struggling a little bit to remember the 2015 season, but, you know, 2016, what was it? SMU and Navy were the big ones. 2017, a lot. 2018, Maryland specifically, almost Tulsa. So time to kick the habit, Tom, and you know, not have any clunkers like you've had so far in, you know, every year as a head coach, or at least most years as a head coach.
Yeah. So, I mean, basic expectation for the season, one blowout win, one bad loss, good offense, good consistent offense, and some okay defense. That's what you should expect as a Longhorn fan out of this team. And to make it to Arlington. There you go. I just summed up, 30 minutes of talking in about 10 seconds. But let's go ahead and get into some of the fall camp notes. And really, the biggest news from the fall camp have to be the injuries. Luckily, a lot of these injuries aren't super severe. Knock on wood, cross my fingers, whatever. But they still are happening. It's not, you know, let's go ahead and talk about the severity and what each means and if it really does mean anything. And we'll start off with the newest news. Brennan Eagles getting arthroscopic surgery on his elbow, cleaning up an old high school injury. Joe, he was a starting wide receiver, just broke in, and then all of a sudden he has to get surgery. Where does this leave him heading into the season?
It sounds like they expect him, as with basically everybody but Kirk Johnson on the injury list, they expect him to be ready for the first game. It robs him of reps, but as I'm going to probably say for each of these guys, say for Kirk Johnson, you know, it's okay considering they're not going to miss the first game, or at least definitely not going to miss the second game. So, I mean, a little bit odd timing that a high school injury is just now being taken care of, but that's not to say that, you know, anything nefarious is going on. It's just a little bit interesting timing. I think Eagle's problem last year was with his hamstring or his quad or his glute. So unrelated injury to what really hampered him last year.
You have to wonder if it was just a re-aggravation of it, because if it's not, why not do it in the off season instead of the fall camp?
Maybe he was just trying to play through it and, you know, had for 2 years. So, this isn't the worst thing. It'll allow Josh Moore to get a little bit more, some more reps at Z. I mean, John Burt already gets a lot of reps at Z, so it'll help him. It'll help create another player that you feel good about with your depth. And it just robs Brennan Eagles of some important reps, as he was looking like a guy who could be starting the opening game for back-to-back seasons at wide receiver.
really pushing that narrative, Joe. But yeah, I don't think there's – I think the worst thing that's going to come from this is, you know, he's losing the reps, but the fact that he's losing the reps means he's also losing out on building chemistry with Sam. Let's say Sam doesn't fix the issue of spreading the rock. You potentially have the same problem with Sam and Eagles that you had last year with Sam and Duvernay, where they're not on the same page just because they lack the reps together. They lack going even out after practice and practicing together and getting that chemistry. So that's what you're that's what you're missing there, potentially. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's a potential issue that you're getting out of that. Other than that, there's not really much of an issue. I mean, honestly, for the next two guys we're going to talk about, Caden Stearns and Keyonte Ingram, a lot of these injuries, kind of blessings in disguise, especially with these two guys, because you know what you're getting out of Stearns and Ingram. You know what these two guys bring. Do you need them to really, like a guy like Caden Stearns, really rep over and over again in practice? Do you need Keyonte Ingram to be taking more hits in practice? No, you don't. That's not what you need.
I'll somewhat disagree. Everybody needs practice. Literally everybody. I mean, you know, unless you're Todd Gurley or Aaron Donald, and I don't see those guys on the roster, everybody's got to practice. And, you know, practice includes a scrimmage. And, you know, everybody needs scrimmage one. I understand that you want to prevent your guys from maybe absorbing hits and stuff like that, especially at running back. And that makes sense. And there are ways to do that. But you know, in order to prepare for games, you have to practice like you're in a game. And you know, that's what scrimmages are for. Everybody needs at least scrimmage one to know what they're getting into. Just so turns out that in scrimmage one for Texas, Caden Stearns and Keyonte Ingram, had ankle and knee, you know, dings essentially, that have now placed them for sure in the bubble wrap. I don't think Eagles was a bubble wrap guy, but Caden Stearns and Keyonte Ingram, those are two guys that you want to make sure you have when the first real game comes around.
Right.
You know that what those guys are capable of and what they can do. But and I think there was a major overreaction. We get this every year, like, oh, Tom Herman and his physical practices. Like, yep, Tom Herman does have physical practices. It's something that he has been unapologetic about ever since he got to Houston. It's something that his former boss was unapologetic about and probably used as a way to win, you know, several consecutive Big Ten titles. I think that, you know, a big overreaction came because A, it was Stearns and Ingram, two guys who are impact players, and B, they were the first ones, really. Like, these were the first major names or big injury news of the camp. I think there was a huge overreaction to that about, you know, why are they even practicing? Like, you got to practice. You're a football player. You got to practice, or else you're not going to get better unless you're Aaron Donald or, you know, any number of guys. And that is not on Texas's roster yet. But, you know, like you mentioned, small blessing in disguise. These guys will be ready for the first game for Louisiana Tech. And you know what you're getting from them. It allows other guys to get some reps. And, you know, defensive back is a place where you have plenty of depth, where you felt you've felt like you have six safeties that could potentially be starting level, with Stearns being one of them. Running back, unfortunately, not the same, especially with Keyonte Ingram, you know, going and getting his bone bruise, for lack of a better term, and Jaron Watkins, you know, brief hospital trip for a minor injury. But that leads us into the next one with Kirk Johnson. Like, with Keyonte Ingram being down, or temporarily being down, and Kirk Johnson being down for up to 6 weeks, it's a lot more dire at running back than it is at defensive back.
Yeah, weren't we in the situation, what was it, not this past spring, but the spring before
ago.
That,
yeah,
with the running back position, yeah,
it was basically just Kyle Porter.
Yep, exactly. So it's not as dire as that, but it, you know, practices the running back position is a little thin. But man, you just got to feel for Kirk Johnson.
Yeah,
it finally seems like Kirk Johnson was gonna make it through a camp without injuring himself, and he was getting praise. And I was starting to buy into it. I was like, hey, you know, maybe he's actually going to do it. Maybe he's going to make it through spring and maybe make it through fall. And then this happens. You know, he falls on his shoulder wrong, and then all of a sudden he's out for 6 weeks. It's just unfortunate.
that's basically how it's been with him. Previously, it's been all leg problems, I think, and now, yeah, he falls on his shoulder wrong, and it's either clavosternicular or sternoclavicular. I forgot which one it was, a joint. So basically, whatever connects your chest to your shoulder sounds like was sprained, and you know, you feel awful for him. This is what his redshirt junior season, his likely his last opportunity to get a lot of snaps with his brother, Colin. But you know, he's as Colin has reported, as you know, basically all as Colin has said, as basically every coach of his has said, he's a positive guy who, you know, no matter what, keeps his head down and keeps working for the team. But without it, even if he was running whatever third or fourth, it's still a loss on your depth and a loss of, you know, potentially what you wanted to be a really good story coming from this season.
Right. And this one was depressing. The next one is Zach Shackelford, who hurt his foot. It's usually been his ankle, but now it's his foot. Joe, I know you're probably going to go pro on this because I'm going to go con. And you can say that Shackelford, we know what we're getting out of him, so he doesn't need to be out there. He can rest up. But I think this one hurts a little bit more. And it's not because Shackelford needs the reps, but it's because the offensive line as a unit needs the reps. The offensive line is a unit, and it really is important, the chemistry between the guys. Getting comfortable with the guy next to you is important. So when or if Parker Braun gets to the first team, as of now, he won't be next to Zach Shackelford. He'll be next to Derek Kerstetter, who is there now instead of getting reps at his actual position. So where this hurts, it hurts the chemistry of that offensive line, which I think, while it's not a huge issue, it's an issue that's a real one.
Yeah, no, I definitely get what you're saying. This is the most cohesive grouping on a team that you have to have all working together, and any opportunity for Shackelford not to be working by, whether it be Junior Angulau or Parker Braun or Kerstedt or anything like that, yeah, that does have a little effect. I think you also have to take in mind the negative of not having a, you know, senior, knowledgeable center, proven guy. But I will disagree about, you know, the whole he's getting snaps. Derek Kerstetter's getting snaps at center now instead of his actual position. I mean, center is his actual position now that Zach Shackelford is out for a little bit. And after, I think, what everybody saw from Fafita Girmay in the spring, no matter what the depth chart says with him being number two, he's not number two. That's not his spot right now. And so you have, you know, you're getting some work for your backup center. And now you also are, as a result, likely getting Parker Braun into the mix since he was part of that top six. And there are only five offensive linemen on a field. So now you're starting to get Parker Braun in for some first team reps. So, yeah, there's you can't really give too much of a positive for Shackelford going down. That's definitely a key guy that, you know, if my prediction of Big Texas maybe having the Big 12's best offensive line is to come true, that's definitely a guy you need in order to make that, you know, possibility into a reality. But, you know, Derek Kerstetter, I think over the past few years, it's been proven that he is the swing guy, that he's a guy that they feel like could play all five positions on the line. And so any ability to, you know, allow him to continue to become that guy, get better at becoming that guy with the first team is, you know, it doesn't cancel out Shackelford's injury, obviously, but I don't think it's a negative because it's, you know, oh no, Kerstetter's not getting right guard reps anymore. This is Kerstetter's role. It's just that he was good enough in, you know, as a right tackle or a right guard to be able to be in the first string, but he is a guy that they can deploy all over the offensive line.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I understand that, but still, I mean, you want your starting guy out there, and that's
right.
Not where Derek Kerstetter would start. That's my point. Now let's head into a little bit more of the recruiting area, but sticking with the injuries here, kind of a good mesh to go in, good runway. Lake McCree of Lake Travis, the tight end. Your 2021, I think he's a second commit in that 2021 class. Literally the day before I go to Lake Travis's practice, tears his ACL and his partial tear of the meniscus. He is out for the year. It's pretty similar to what happened to Cade Brewer at Texas. It's a big-time bummer for him and for his development to become a Longhorn.
Yeah, this was going to be one of his first opportunities to be a full-time tight end, you know, really get everything down on the position. And now, you know, obviously that's not going to happen for him this year. He's going to, you know, need to recover once he gets surgery. And, you know, it's obviously something that medical technology has come a long way. But, you know, that's still a big, it may be a small ligament technically. I think I didn't go to med school, but it's still a big ligament as far as athletic ability, being able to move goes. And he's going to have to rehab it in order to get back to the player that he was. And you know, he was slated to be, you know, aside from Hudson Card, probably the go-to player for Lake Travis this year. He was going to very likely rack up the receiving yards that Garrett Wilson did last year for them. From that tight end spot, and he was going to do it in a manner similar to what he's going to be doing at Texas. And so it robs him a little bit of his ability to physically develop. It's just a big disappointment, not only for Lake himself, for Texas, obviously having one of their commits go down to a major injury, but also for Lake Travis. This is going to drastically affect how their season looks. Though the football talent is improving in Austin, there's really two or three, at least within the Austin city limits, and even if you want to go all the way to Round Rock, there are two or three that really stand out. And Lake Travis and Westlake are those two, or at least two of those three. And, you know, that's a big measuring stick for what Lake Travis and Westlake measure their seasons on. And this is going to make it, you know, tough for them to be able to overcome the Chaps. And that kind of plays into, you know, their bigger test of the year, and this is for everybody, but their big test of the year are not going to come until they've reached the playoffs, just because they're not in the particularly strongest of districts, and they are not, you know, really lighting it up with the most difficult teams during their non-district. So this is, you know, not only a tough development for Lake, but it's going to be tough for Lake Travis, and it'll make life a little bit more complicated for Hudson Card, because he loses probably his biggest receiver, his best receiver. So it has a lot of ripple effects, not only on Lake Travis, but a little bit on Texas recruiting and its commits as well.
Yeah, it does. But when I talked to Lake, the one thing he wanted to make clear was that he talks with Cade Brewer a lot of the time, and Cade Brewer reassured Lake that he's going to come off of this injury a lot stronger in that leg than he did before. And that's something that I've heard a lot of times with that ACL injury. You come off it a lot stronger. Another thing that Lake really needed to work on in his game is the upper body strength, especially for his blocking and getting out of defensive backs and linebackers' holds. And the ACL tear, meniscus tear, that's in the lower body. It's not going to affect his upper body. So a big part of what he needs to focus on, he's going to be able to focus on 100%. So silver lining. Let's get off the sad subjects of injuries and get into some recruiting, some real recruiting, because Texas still on that hot tear, as they got two commitments over the past week. And I mean, man, still 2.5 days between each commitment, I believe. But they got the commitment of Jaren Thompson, defensive back out of Lufkin, and the commitment, kind of a surprise, of defensive end Princely Umemielen. And that's how you say his name. That's one I can get right there. So let's start off with Jaren Thompson, the defensive back from Lufkin. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, after the defensive back recruiting picture started to take a little bit of shape, and by take a little bit of shape, I mean some guys committed elsewhere, like Bryson Washington to OU.
That's a nice way of saying they missed on guys.
Lathan Ransom to Ohio State and Chris Thompson to Auburn. Jaren Thompson was a guy that they had recruited for a while. They offered in late July and then pushed for his commitment at the end of July and early August and got it. Obviously, doesn't exactly fit the same way in the defense as Chris Thompson does. He's not a like-for-like replacement. I don't think he's a like-for-like replacement for Washington and Ransom, just because of the athletic ability those guys have. And they probably – Ransom could play all three spots, but Washington probably was going to be a guy that you put maybe on the boundary or something like that. But with Jaren Thompson, you get a guy who you know is – going to buy in at Texas, wants to be at Texas, and fits a very difficult position of the nickel back. He's probably going to be a guy who, you know, at 6'0", 183. He's definitely going to have to grow into the position, literally grow his body in order to be able to hold up on the edge for some run fits. But you have a tenacious player, a lot of tackling in his huddle. You see that. And that's really impressive. A lot of kids are there for the highlight plays and not there for making the plays, you know, the football plays. And Jaron showcases that in his huddle. And, you know, it was a great job by the staff of, after responding to some very tough losses on the recruiting trail, to go and get a guy who has a great fit for the defense and wants to be at Texas. I can tell you that Notre Dame thought very highly of Jaron Thompson. They were very... they very much wanted to go from South Bend into East Texas and to get him up to Notre Dame. And, you know, once I, you know, spoke with some people who cover Notre Dame and let them know what was going on, they were not particularly happy because they recognized just how good a player Jaron Thompson was and what he would bring to the table. So definitely a good job of identifying a need after some tough losses on the recruiting trail. Like I said, not a like for like replacement for guys like Ransom and Chris Thompson, but still a very good pickup at a very difficult position. And go back to East Texas in a program that has churned out a lot of talent in recent years, and Texas doesn't normally jump in on it. And now they've got a member of what is it, the Wolfpack, I believe. So,
yeah, Jaron Thompson, you pretty much nailed it. He's kind of your plan B at that position. He really is. I mean, it's, you really can't say plan B after then more than after Bryson Washington commits to Oklahoma, you immediately offer him. But what he does give, and he gives a lot. It's not like he's a very big step down. He's not at all. He gives you above average athleticism. He's got 4.6 40, a 4.2 shuttle, 32.8 inch vertical. But what I really like about him are these two things. He, like you said, his tackling is very good. It's not going to knock you out of your shoes, but when he hits you, he sticks. He's a guy who doesn't miss many tackles. He knows where to put his head on tackles. He knows where to aim his body for tackles so that they stick and the guy goes down. Now, the other thing I like about him is he has the prototypical frame of a safety. Deontay McKnight is going to love him. He's got long arms, square shoulders, a thick torso, loose hips, powerful legs. The dude is built to be a safety. And that's where they want him to be. They want him to be your field safety. And he's really heady for a guy who doesn't have a lot of acclaim. So what I really like about him is the long-term potential he gives the Longhorns. Then a few days later, or was it a day later, the Longhorns land Princely Umamielen, and it's the return of the shush emoji and all of that fun stuff, but it really wasn't at all. I don't know if anybody really was expecting it so soon. Mm-hmm. I know, at least on our site, we said that, hey, Princely Umamielen is starting to go towards Texas, but I don't think we were even expecting him to commit when he did.
Right. He had given a bunch of different dates and October and stuff like that. He had thrown out a lot of different stuff. Obviously, Princely, I mean, I think you can tell from his YouTube channel and his social media that he enjoys being recruited, and more power to him. You should only get recruited once unless you enter the portal. But, you know, this is an opportunity that doesn't come very often, and I completely understand anybody taking advantage of it. From my perspective, it kind of seems like Texas sold him on Texas. He had talked a lot about, you know, in those interviews, speaking with Coach Elko, the defensive coordinator at A&M, about a desire to play on the outside, play on the edge. You saw those graphics where they put him and Myles Garrett by each other, which I don't think is a very apt comparison. You know, despite all that, despite his wanting to play end in a four-down alignment, you know, he said that multiple times. He still chose Texas, and I think that's a credit to not only Oscar Giles, but Tom Herman and Brian Carrick and anybody who had their hands in this recruitment.
And Jimbo Fisher's face.
Allegedly. Just, you know, making sure that they were able to overcome what was, you know, what had been a buzz word for Texas fans about the four down front being a problem. That was, you know, the story of June was, how do we recruit kids with, you know, a three down front, because it doesn't seem to be working. It turned out to work okay. You know, you keep local talent, and I know I've said this many times before, is if there's a guy in Austin or the Austin area, and there's a guy in, I don't know, Lubbock, or let's think of a town with it, San Angelo, recruit the guy from Austin, all things being equal, just because that's your backyard, and you don't want to hear the stories about the Austin kid that got away. The San Angelo kid that got away makes a little bit of sense. The Austin kid that got away right in your backyard, that's a little bit tougher to overcome, a little bit tougher to dispel, and Texas won't have to dispel it for Princely Umanyelen. But now the focus turns on another defensive end at some point, but they still, getting Princely only helps with that venture.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but honestly, I'm not 100% sold on Umanyelen. I think he has a high ceiling. His frame is built out. He carries 250 pounds very well. He has like a wingspan of 6'10". But, you know, he has a lot of places he really needs to improve his game.
Right.
He's athletic. He has all the tools. When you watch him play, there are things that are missing. And that's going to be Oscar Giles' job, to figure out how do you stop him from standing up at the snap? How do you stop him from not using his hands when he's blitzing? How do you stop him from a lot of these fundamental mistakes that he makes?
Yeah, it's one of those, kind of what I was talking about with, you know, you want to get your local Austin talent. At the same time, it's a little bit plays into what you're saying. If Princely Umanyelen's from San Angelo, I don't know exactly how hard Texas is recruiting him. Not to say that he's not good enough to play at Texas, but it's just one of those things where he's a combination of ability in your backyard and at a position of need to where they had to go get him. But like you said, he's got a lot to work on. This isn't going to be a guy who plays immediately. Even if he does end up growing like Tavondre Sweat, I felt like you could see Tavondre Sweat was about to become this huge, huge person. And I know there's a lot of comparison between the two, but I think that Sweat came in with a frame a little bit with a lot more room to add than Umanyelen did. And I think they're going to be in separate roles. I think, like you mentioned, Umanyelen will be on the end in a three down front, while Tavondre Sweat has very clearly made his name known at nose. So not a guy to probably expect from early or expect to hear from extremely early, but a very good recruiting win, especially over a lot of in-state and regional rivals, and you know, fits a position need, and you get a guy from your backyard. You just have to get him to where you need him to go, and that's going to be Oscar Giles' job from now on.
Yeah, I have to say, probably the sweetest part about this commitment is how the Longhorns and guys that you really weren't expecting to be your best recruiters, Oscar Giles, I mean, man, he was getting his name thrown around in unfriendly ways, how they have just had guys like Terry Price's wheels spinning. I mean, this is a guy that the Aggies not pulling him really hurts the Aggies. It's a huge blow to them. So that is honestly the sweetest part of this one. You know, yeah, they get a great guy. But for a lot of Longhorn fans, it's the fact that the way that they are just taking it to different schools in some of these recruitment battles is astounding. We've gone through the two guys who have committed. There are probably a few more guys along the way. And right now, the two guys who are trending that way for Texas are Quentin Johnston and Xavien Alford. That's where I think Joe and I would agree. Those are two guys who really like Texas right now. So let's go ahead and play a game of, if they were to commit to Texas, what are you getting out of these guys? So we'll start off with Quentin Johnston. Joe, you and I have both gone and seen him in the past day. What did you see out there?
I think with Quentin Johnston, you're seeing a guy who, you know, despite playing for a power program in Central Texas, may not have a ton of attention. I remember talking with Eric Naline, and he said, you know, Johnston kind of popped up on his radar when he was watching Jarrett Wiley's quarterback film. Like, oh, he's throwing it to the same guy every time. And then he goes and looks him up and sees, oh, he's got a 6'10 high jump. I think right now with Quentin Johnston, you have a guy who is a pretty good receiver, but a phenomenal athlete. I don't think that's a problem. You know, that happens with a lot of players, and especially when he's in an offense right now where he runs a lot of go routes. He runs a lot of, you know, hitches and digs. Not a very complex route tree in that Temple offense. he's able to out-athlete guys, just jump over them to catch the ball or, you know, run by them. But there's some receiver stuff like ball security. I'm not a big, I guess, proponent of him having hands problems, but there are some who see that. He's not called sticky. I don't think he's sticky, but I don't think he's got a drops issue.
Here's the problem that with that is it's not that he has a hands issue, is he has a focus issue. The consistency in his hands is an issue. It was very reminiscent to me of what you saw to Colin Johnson in his sophomore year, where Colin Johnson makes those crazy catches, but then there's those other balls that it's like, dude, that hit you right in the chest. Why did you not catch that?
And I think that has to do a lot with being a very good athlete, not a great receiver right now. But that's fine. You know, Texas and TCU are going to end up his final two. Both have a good message to sell with wide receivers. I mean, you just had two almost go for 1,000 yards at Texas last year in a non-explosive offense. And then you've got Jalen Reagor putting up numbers with Malcolm Kelly coaching him at TCU. So definitely a guy who I would not expect to be a immediate contributor no matter where he went, just because he's got to work on being a really great football player instead of a really great athlete on the field. But there are not a whole lot of athletes, maybe save, man, I don't exactly know. He's not going to get the Demas comparison from me, but there's a lot of similarities there. And then in that he's a phenomenal athlete that needs to learn a little bit of the finer things of in between the lines, but you know, outside the lines and in the testing realm, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, you're right. He is a phenomenal athlete. When I asked him, and I think I tweeted out yesterday, his high jump, his how high he can jump, 6'11". He told me he could jump over his teammate, who I asked how tall he was, 6'5", without using his hands. He can jump over this dude. His 40 is 4'5", flat. Those are some insane numbers for a guy who is 6'4", 190. And on top of that, he can add some weight. I mean, man, his legs are pretty skinny.
Right.
His torso, very skinny.
I agree.
He has room to put on some weight there. So he could honestly go to your X position or your Z position. I don't know where, because he's a jump ball threat either way. When they were doing a red zone drill, they threw a fade to him. He jumped, I don't know, maybe 4 feet in the air and one-handed the ball. That was impressive, and I was kicking myself. I didn't have my camera up to record that. That was insane. But like I said, the issues he has, and like you said, are the more subtle ones, his blocking. He needs to improve his blocking and his consistency. And when I talked to his coach, what he told me is, he needs to put in the same level of love and effort and focus on blocking and making the simple catches that he does with making the crazy one-handed acrobatic ones. Because you can see it, and I saw it in his eyes, when he's going to make that ball, when the ball is, you know, maybe a foot over in the air, his eyes widen and he gets that focus. But when it's just a simple catch, you know, he's already looking upfield. So it's simple things like that that he needs to fix. And those are fixable issues. And the next guy we have, Xavien Alford. Xavien Alford is, right now, it just seems like he's bouncing back and forth between Texas and Texas A&M, but it's now starting to seem like he's leading towards Texas. So, Joe, what are you seeing out of the tape and when you go to watch Xavien Alford?
Xavien Alford, he's a guy who, when you watch his tape, what he may lack in athleticism and size, you know, I think he's in the 5'11", right at 6 foot, you know, 170-something pound range. He makes up for in some of the best instincts I've ever seen on a defensive back. This is a guy who knows exactly where to go basically every play. A big part of why Shadow Creek in their first varsity season made it all the way to the state title game in 5A and gave Highland Park a pretty good game. He is one of the leaders on that defense, and you know the defense is good, is as good as it was because of guys like him. He's a guy that, you know, you can obviously build athleticism on the guys, build a little bit of muscle and, you know, get guys bigger and stronger in strength and conditioning. But this is a guy where, you know, bigger and stronger is going to help him, but speed is going to help him as well, just because of how instinctual he is. The thing that made Caden Stern so special is you combined his phenomenal instincts with, you know, extremely high level athleticism. Alford, I don't know if he's got the same instincts, but he for sure does not have the same athleticism. But, you know, that those instincts allow him to be as good of a player as he is, as sought after as he is, and a good piece for any sort of defense looking for a guy who, you know, may not immediately contribute, may not be a guy who shoots up depth charts and makes all these spectacular plays, but a guy who you can, you know, consistently rely on almost every, you know, from maybe even from the beginning, to know where to go on defense. And in a league that's as complex offensively, even without as much of the raid, you still have to face Oklahoma, a complex offense. You still have to face Oklahoma State with their complex offense. And it's a guys like that who know where to go, you know, wherever the ball is put are valuable to any roster.
Right. If you were to use one of the buzzwords for Xavier Alford, it would be ball hawk. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah,
he's a guy who, you're right, his instincts have him where he is always around the ball. He knows where the ball is going, especially in the passing game. He's able to high point the ball very well or come downfield on a slant route. Those are where he really excels. And the run game, he knows where things are happening, but he's not quick enough and doesn't bring enough of an impact in the tackling to really make a difference at the next level of play. That's where you're saying his speed could help him out, giving him a little bit more of that extra pop where he's able to stop a guy. Because a lot of times, especially in goal line, you're going to be the guy who's playing that linebacker role who has to stop that running back. Caden Stearns did that last year. Brandon Jones did that last year. Xavier Alford, if he goes to Texas, will need to be able to do that, or wherever he goes.
Mm.
And on top of that, on top of Xavier Alford, if he picks Texas, another coach who was looking like he was having an off year in Craig Nivar, all of a sudden turns it around. Yeah, you had Oscar Giles, you had Stan Drayton, and the two guys left who were having an iffy year were Nivar and Todd Orlando. Now, Nivar, if he lands this, saves it. Saves the year. Now, Todd Orlando, he's really going to be focusing on this season and hoping that what the Longhorns do on the field will affect some of the bigger recruitments out there. Or go really, really high JUCO, which is just seems to be his MO. But I think right now Texas is in a pretty good spot for most of the guys on their board who they're really shooting for, except for maybe Ringo. So Longhorn fans, the hot streak probably isn't going to be over soon. And it reminds me, and this is probably going to be not a very popular take, of the hype going into the 2017 season. Tom Herman's your new coach. You have all of these big-time recruits committing, and the hype train, the Kool-Aid, is just flowing going into the season. It's just insane. It feels like that. It feels kind of like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're getting close to what should be one of Texas' best seasons in a while. So.
And the recruitment hype that's happening right now is just feeding right into the hype of the season. It's huge.
It's a splash.
Right? All right, but I think we're going to hit it off there. That has been your 4th and 5 podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com. You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find both of us at the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. On that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.